Okay, then we'll call a meeting, Monday, January 13, 2014. The order. Tina, would you please call the roll?
Chairman Christensen?
Present.
Commissioner Stanger?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Jensen? Commissioner Rodlin?
Here.
And Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
And Commissioner Tuttle?
Yeah, she's excused. Okay, this is time we set aside for comments from citizens. We don't see any citizens here tonight, except for what's sitting up here, so we'll move to the next item. Approval of minutes, December 9th, 2013. Commissioners?
I only see one typo on the front page, and D, it's, my name is spelled wrong.
Who's a different guy? Did you get that, Tina? Okay. Yeah, I read through it. I didn't catch anything.
I didn't see anything.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Might just comment, Commissioner Stanger, we're not really actually taking any action on anything tonight except for the minutes. So I'll have to get you a little more familiar with parliamentary procedure. But on the vote for the minutes, I think you're going to want to abstain since you weren't here for that meeting.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes of the December 9th, 2013 meeting.
With the change for?
With the change with the name.
Right.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Dirksen to accept the minutes, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? First workshop we have tonight is comprehensive plan amendment CPA 2012-C 2015 comprehensive plan update. Paul, you got the card.
Turn on this light up here.
Dark. Not for me. I can go to sleep like this.
Okay. These lights, I think, will get brighter and warmed up.
Okay. If you need a pointer, I have one.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you an update on what's happening with the 2015 update and share this schedule with you. I think maybe you've gotten this before. This has been updated to reflect some changes that are happening this month. But it the work that's been taking place for the last 3-4 months has been involved in getting things set up and collecting a tremendous amount of data and information. As you know, that the Mind Mixer website is now up and running, and I hope each of you will get in there and register on Mind Mixer. And there's a in that on the homepage, on the bottom left area of the homepage of the city, there's a link directly to the Vision Monroe website, and within that you get into this Mind Mixer program. But we're hoping that to get number of people registered and getting a look at that before the workshop.
Do we have to go in and register?
Yeah.
I assume we would automatically be registered.
No, it's every individual needs to register.
Okay.
And in there, among other things, you'll find this little survey little 5-6 question survey. Be good to take that. And there's also something called Picture Monroe, another place where what's being asked for is that if you have some favorite pictures of the city, to go ahead and post them in this website. This is going to become a lot more active and interactive as we get into the process. But it's going to be quite a bit of work for the next 18 months. And this visioning workshop on the 23rd is really the first visible big step to start this process. I know we have a meeting this Thursday.
Right, but it's not on the schedule.
Late afternoon. No, it's not. The CAC, or the Citizens Advisory Commission, schedule is not on here, and that's going to be somewhat fluid. That probably meet more like once a quarter or something. But this will give you a kind of an overall look at the workshops that are coming up. There's some related economic development. I know there's one related to parks coming down the road, another one for transportation. And it's going to be quite a bit of interaction with the commission through this thing. And they do plan to rent some storefront space downtown and be in town for three or four days and have kind of a continuing workshop during that time where people can just kind of casually come in and, in addition to having some formal events, the ability to have people just casually come in and offer whatever they're thinking, or just come in and look. But the intent of sharing this, to kind of give you an idea, that a lot of the dates are not set, but they're really in terms of basically by the month. It gives you an idea of the kind of process we're going to be going through. So what we've done for the last few months is just kind of a preview for the next year. But I didn't plug it into any detail on this, but I can tell you the visioning workshop, The folks from Studio Cascade, the lead consultant, will be there, along with a couple of people from Leland Associates. They're the economic development or economics consultant. And they'll be talking about some of the basic things that are, some basic trends that are happening. And the whole idea behind this visioning workshop is to get people, it's a combination of giving out some information and then some hands-on exercises. Table exercises. We've got a bunch of tables set up. I call it kitchen table meetings to try and revisit and revamp and set out another vision for Monroe. So this would be a pretty big first step. The other thing, any questions on that?
I have a question as far as interaction. How connected is City Council going to be in on this process here?
There's there are certain points where there are meetings with council, and I believe there's at least a couple points where we're trying to bring together the commission and the council jointly in this. I know there's a session on economic development that is really directed more toward council and trying to set some policy and so forth, but I think that would be a good point to have one of those joint meetings with the commission. And you sit on the Parks Board, and so there's a good tie from here to there. When's your term up with the Parks Board?
It should be up now, but I need to, that's something I was going to mention later, but my question, the reason I asked that is because in the last year, I can't remember the last time we had a meeting with City Council, a combined meeting, Planning Commission, City Council.
I don't think we had one last year.
I don't think we did either.
We talked about it.
Yeah, but I think it's something that we need to somehow schedule and make sure that
right.
We have at least a couple a year, maybe every 6 months or so.
Yeah, I think it's a good suggestion. Mm-hmm. And one of those needs to happen here fairly soon, because we got a lot going on as we kick this thing off. There's going to be some good opportunities for that.
Well, the end of last year was pretty busy, so we had.
Yes.
I can understand why you made it, put it off. I think with this going on this year, this is going to be something that we need to make sure that we get tied with City Council. Is that something you want to bring up and maybe try and schedule, or I can work with you on that? Or?
Yeah. We'll have to see how we can tailor it with this. I'm expecting most or all of the council members to be at the workshop next week. But I think some point, maybe soon after that, would be a good time to have a joint meeting. And what we may be able to do is have the consultant, take whatever from the workshop and then come back to talk about what happened and what the workshop has brought.
Okay.
And that would be a good time to have a joint session with the council.
Is that after a kickoff meeting?
Pardon me?
After this kickoff meeting on the 21st?
Yeah, after the visioning meeting sometime.
Okay.
We can share the results from that.
Not after this Thursday meeting?
No.
Okay.
Sometime after this, the meeting on the 23rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's one on the 21st, the kickoff meeting, that's going to be at the school, right? The Park Place School?
Oh, is it the 21st?
There's a kickoff meeting with SCI Leland.
Oh, that's, that's...
At least I remember that in my... Pretty sure in my email it said the 21st.
Well, we're having a meeting on the, today's the 14th. Okay, the 16th with the advisory committee. And the following Thursday, which is the 23rd, okay, that 21st item, it should not be on this list.
So there's no meeting on the
21st? No, there isn't. Not sure where that came from. I had no idea.
So the vision workshop meeting on the 23rd, that's the one at the Park Place?
Right.
Middle school?
Yep.
I don't recall seeing a time on that.
It's 6:30. Yeah, it's on the flyer.
It is.
Trying to get a pretty good turnout
yes,
for that.
Yes, okay.
We're doing email blasts through the city and through the chamber, and trying to set one up with the school district to put an email blast out to the students and parents and so forth. So I'm hoping that we're going to have a problem having to scramble for more tables and chairs. But it should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Okay. Do you have anything else on that?
Not on that. On the other attachment I gave you was the summary of interviews.
Yeah.
It was just a compilation of the things that they pulled from all their, the consultant, Bill Grimes, had one-on-one meetings with several people listed in the first page. And it's interesting to see what common threads there were from those interviews. Things like traffic congestion, downtown, prison and any number of things.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that's gonna come out in this meeting.
West Gateway.
Mm-hmm, right. There is a typo on page five, they're referring to SR 233, and it's really 203.
203, yeah, I saw that right away.
We're gonna have to fix that.
Well, new road.
Yeah, that's a loop road around Monroe.
Yeah.
Those have a tough time reading the comments on the maps.
Yeah, the maps are a little hard to read, I question whether to throw those in, and the consultant's like, yeah, just go ahead and throw them in there, and these were sketches that he made as they were talking, you know, with some of these folks. Bill would sit there and just scribble their thoughts on paper as best he could. But they are hard to read. But at a larger scale, they might make some sense. That's really all that I had on that that item. Important thing is this meeting this Thursday, we're gonna have a phone conference with the consultant, and then the follow-up. I believe they're trying to put together, desiring to put together a meeting the day before the workshop, and maybe we can set that up when to find some time to scribble everybody when we meet this Thursday, all that can make it. Or we may be able to cover what we need to in this meeting on Thursday. I hope we can do that.
The meeting Thursday's here, right?
Here, right.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's at 4 o'clock?
Yes.
Yeah. Commissioners, anything else for the fall on this workshop item today? Okay. All right, Paul. We'll move on to RV, Planning Commissioner Training.
Yeah, what I had in mind there is this is something I've been meaning to do for a long time. I have a couple things. One is I've got a couple of very short, like 5-6 minute videos. One about, I think I gave you these cheat sheets.
Yeah.
About council, staff, commissions, and the other is regarding the comp plan. And then I've been this weekend during the football game, during the commercials, I read the first part of this book here. I had a lot of time to read the book. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the first part, like the first, I don't know, first couple of sections of this, and over time come back and hit on some of the other sections. I used to be an adjunct professor part-time, and so I try real hard not to be a lecturer with a talking to you as students.
Yeah.
But it's a fairly complicated subject. I tried to take the first couple of parts and zero it down to some basic points from that about the whole process of decision making. And I told Commissioner Stenger, I said, you know, once I go through some of that stuff, you're going to say, what am I doing here? Yeah. So why don't we start with there's a couple of videos I got from the Washington Association of Cities. There's one about, I guess, the roles and relationships of council, commission, and staff, which is kind of interesting.
You know, you mentioned you have a hard time being a professor. You know, if you look at the two of us sitting here, at our age, being a student.
Yeah.
It's tough.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm. Is the mic back?
Last class, I was doing this flight training. This is a good one. Don't know, 25 years old.
Oh,
flight training, huh?
I had four of them.
Well, hopefully the people pick this up. Let me get this started, and we'll run this for a minute, then we'll take a few minutes to talk about it. Run one more after that about comp plan, and then I've got just, I don't know, about 10 slides about decision making that we'll try and work through some of the important points of that.
Okay.
So this might be a good basis to start from, though, and how we these groups work together. Hope you can all hear that.
Comprehensive plans are all about community, and each of your cities has its own character, its own vision, its own direction. AWSC developed a series of short videos to help you prepare your GMA update. Each video contains a few key concepts and conversation starters that you can relate to your community. This segment looks at how do council, staff, and commission work together.
The updates of the comp plans are a huge opportunity for the community to really look at itself and evaluate what its future will be. And there are three major players in that, in addition to the citizens, and that are the first is the city council, which really has the policy role. Their job is to set the policy and ultimately make the decision that has to be made for the community's future. Feeding into that decision are the staff who must prepare and evaluate the detail of the work, and the planning commission role. In most cities in the state of Washington, the planning commission role really is sort of a super public involvement agency in a sense. Their job is to hear the community, bring that input together, and then bring a recommendation forward to the city council. Now, the relationship of these three is pretty critical because the policymakers, ultimately the city council, will make the decision. But it's not fair to the citizens or to the planning commission if there isn't some communication going on between the policymakers, planning commission, the citizens, and of course the staff. The staff has to have to put all this together. So how that relationship works is really critical, and having some kind of dialogue and communication between those three entities in a very public way is very important. I think it forms the process. Ultimately, it's a richer, better process if there is that dialogue. That said, the city council's role isn't to make the decision up front. It is to really inform, and examples are every community in the state of Washington, every city in the state of Washington, will doubtless have some issues that they have to deal with for transportation and land use. How do you make those links? How do you put those together? Almost every city I can imagine has areas that they need to explore in more depth, or there will be critical issues that they recognize have to be addressed in this plan. Having some dialogue ahead of time, setting the frameworks ahead of time, that can be hugely helpful and inform and make a better product. The most successful comp plan efforts are likely to be informed first by everyone understanding what their role is. The role of the city council is to set policy. I'm going to come back to that in a second. But the role of the planning commission is to really be the eyes and the ears and the senses of the community and take aboard all of the input from the broad community. And that means reaching out. The role of the staff is to help that outreach take place and make sure that the elements of the community are heard or at least invited to the table to be heard, and also to help craft the actual documents and drafting and to help understand what the law requires in that process. So when we define the roles, defining them up front so that everybody understands them, public, staff, commission, and ultimately the council, that's really critical. If everyone understands those roles, now the communication that really will inform this plan can take place. And it is fair to everyone for the city council to be able to express at a very high altitude what the major issues are, whether they're transportation issues or economic development issues or some other issues, design issues, waterfront issues, whatever they are, they need to be identified. expectation that they can be addressed in this process. The Planning Commission's role is really to take that high-level input and add to that what the community is bringing forward to help meld and craft and form that work, and then bring that back to, ultimately, brought back to the City Council. And it's probably also important for there to be some dialogue going back and forth. It's kind of not too much, not too little, but some dialogue going back and forth between the Commission and the public and the Council as this process unfolds. Ultimately, it comes back to the Council for the decision. The Planning Commission doesn't make the decision. They make the recommendation. And the commissioners need to be able at some point then to let go of that, send it to the Council, and ultimately that decision gets made. Overarching, this is all done in the public eye. It all has to be very upfront and in the public eye so that the public gets to see and understand the natural tensions and the natural trade-offs between these issues. When we look at the roles of all of the players that we talked about earlier, starting with the City Council, the City Council does not need to know all the details of this plan. But they do need to know the policy intent, and they do need to know that those plan elements serve the policy intent. Staff need to know the details. And the Planning Commission also needs to know a certain level, somewhere, I guess, in between a very, very high policy and the into the weeds of the details. But there needs to be enough understanding so that the community, public, the developers, everyone, all of the community elements have a chance to interact. So there is an integration, but it's a different piece, and it's a different level of understanding at each of those levels, at the public level, at the Planning Commission level, and at the City Council.
Seem to be running without microphones here. Is anybody's microphone working?
Nope.
I do have one more, but a couple of these questions on here, maybe just touch on this thing with the council and commission and staff. And I agree, it's really that the job of the staff, our primary job is to provide you with information, facts, in some cases recommendations, but how do you see the commission and council relationship? Well, it could be better maybe more often, but you know, we don't always, what the commission recommends doesn't always get done the same way at the council level, but more often than not. Any thoughts about how we might improve that interaction?
Well, it's one way is, like I mentioned earlier, is having periodic combined meetings with the City Council. In my time that I've been here, most of the communication between Planning Commission and City Council has been through staff. I used to go religiously to the City Council meeting. After my wife retired, I slowed down on doing that, but able to communicate anything at the meetings at times, I could hear what's going on, but I wasn't able to pass the information on because the staff was doing that job. So I don't have any other suggestions other than meeting more often with city council. Or I was thinking this week, actually today, that you should see more city council members maybe coming to planning commission meetings.
Yes. Hasn't been much of that lately.
No. It's been a while since I've seen. In fact, when we had the East Monroe thing, I think we had some city council members coming to see what was going on.
Yeah, Jim Camp used to come once in a while.
Yeah, Jim Camp.
Former commissioner.
Has the council, many of them been on the council long enough to do many comp plans?
Half or more of the council is fairly new.
Yeah.
Patsy Kudovec's been on there at least 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Kirk Garing is doing a 2-year term now. He's been on at least 4 that I know of. The others are fairly new, and then we have, of course, a new mayor and a new council member, Jeff Rasmussen, who used to be on the park board.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a mix, but I don't know that anyone goes back to 2005-ish, goes back 10 years. And there are term limits now, but there are some new, some seasoned.
Because I remember the first one we had after the girls' meeting that came on, we didn't know exactly what to do, and I don't think the planning commission at the time did it either. And so the county kind of told us that we needed to get our sewer system in shape. So the first thing we did was work on the sewer system. We ran the sewer system, the Wagner Lake and the Roosevelt, and halfway to Sullivan. And we put a big map out, and boy, did we catch hell. I mean, people out in the county said, you guys are not going to annex me, and which there are a lot out there now anyway, but at that particular time, so we didn't know what was going on. And it kind of helps to know ahead of time which, how far you want to go.
Commissioner Dirksen?
I would just like to know who all the commissioners are. And there's do the city commissioners know who the planning commission, who's even sitting on the planning commission? I think by meeting, maybe we get to know each other a little better, and people that know each other work better together than people that don't know each other.
Good point. I think this, workshop on the 23rd is going to be a good chance to interact with council members on an informal basis. It's not a council meeting, it's not a commission meeting, it's a public workshop meeting. And we can't help but mix commissioners and council members with the public. In fact, it'd be nice to have a council member and a commissioner at every table, but I would hope that the public wouldn't see your presence or the council member presence as being
obtrusive,
awkward,
yeah,
or obtrusive, right? It's
they need to know we're just team members, just like anybody
right,
else.
Right, you're not there as commissioners.
We should make that very
right.
clear before we start.
Yeah. Right, and they're not there as council members.
Right,
you know, it's a duck is a duck, but. I hope people will feel free to speak clearly and not worry about what their council member or commissioner might think.
Yeah. I would love to see more city council people come to an occasional planning commission meeting. Like I say, I know Commissioner Demarest and myself and a couple others used to go. I know Jim Camp used to go to. Him and I used to sit together in the council meetings and discuss what's going on a little bit, you know, meetings going on here. So, but I don't recall too often them coming to our meetings. So that would be nice if you could somehow make a suggestion to the city council, hey, why don't you visit, see what's going on over the planning commission. Commissioner Jensen?
I've been thinking, of course, I've only been on here a few months now, and I would expect as we make these decisions, is the wrong word, but you know, we make a recommendation, either for or against, on any number of whatever the issues are.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect that in most cases it's hoped to have a unanimous decision, either for or against, but obviously occasions will come up that it's a split decision. Is there any way that more information than just that vote count could be passed to the council? Would it be appropriate to have the whole commission, certain members actually at the council meeting where you might say our recommendation is presented, that could actually voice in maybe like a for position and an against position if it's split, or if it's not, just a general, instead of just staff kind of reading, well, hey, they said 7-0 or 5-2 or whatever, actual communication from the commission itself as to maybe some of the thought process that went behind that recommendation.
Yeah, I think they get some of that. They're really interested. They go back and listen to the meeting.
They're not going to do that.
I know council members that do.
Do they? Okay.
Council member Thomas, or Williams, I'm sorry, Tom Williams, used to do that.
Okay.
But I don't know if all of them did, but I know council member Williams did.
I wonder if that would just help build a little more of that connection or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't done it for a while now, that in my recent memory, but I think it might be good to include as a standard procedure, if the recommendation coming forth from the commission to council, that we include the commission minutes as a part of the council packet. And that way it'll at least get that in front of them and give them a little more information. Sometimes we're able to verbalize and sometimes we're not. I think the commission needs a little more visibility that way.
Is the commission allowed to address the council as a commissioner instead of just as the public?
I think that would have to be, I believe it would need to be a role of the chair to carry a message representing the commission.
Yeah, and it would have to get on the agenda, I'm sure. I don't think you just stand up in the middle of the meeting and,
As a private citizen.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you can speak anytime as a private citizen.
Yes, yes. And I've done that. So. Commissioner Stanton.
So, to the topic of having them come to our meetings, maybe we can be prescriptive and send them invitations to certain meetings that we think would be beneficial to them.
It's a good idea.
So, and for example, maybe today wouldn't be a good time for them to come. Obviously,
right.
They can come whenever they want. But as we look at the schedule or the calendar or the agenda, and we think there's something meaty or something that would interest them, perhaps sending an invite to them. We're going to be discussing this. It would be great to have you come attend.
Yeah. You know, like when we were going over to East Monroe, project or the school capital obligation stuff.
Right.
It would have been nice for them to see the process and the pain and the discussion that we went through to get to make our decision. So, yeah, that's a good suggestion.
And sometimes the same people do come in at council than did at commission, but typically not.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near the same number. Okay. We can't seem to get these microphones to work. We'll try to run this other video and hopefully we'll be able to hear it okay. I don't know what the problem is.
own vision, its own direction. AWC developed a series of short videos to help you prepare your GMA update. Each video contains a few key concepts and conversation starters that you can relate to your community. This segment looks at why your GMA plan matters. The comp plan process is really an opportunity for the community to come together on their vision. 1995 wasn't that long ago, and 2035 isn't that far away. But as a city council member, I wasn't here in 1995, and I probably won't be here in 2035. And so my job is to be a caretaker, and the job of the council as a member at this point is to really understand and hear the voices of those who were here in 1995, and try to hear the voices of those who will be here in 2035. I'm a caretaker, and I think that's the job of the council. And I think as we look forward, this is about vision for both the history and the future.
Well, I think land use is the driver of so many things that we do in local government, so many things that we care about, so many things that are important to us. It drives so many issues in our community, things from population to quality of life, public safety, additional park amenities. There's not anything that I can think of that doesn't touch land use or is not influenced directly by land use. Communities have the ability to make choices, and that's what the Growth Management Act and the planning process is all about. It's about making choices. We can grow and we can change the future of our city by choice and design, or by chance. And I think most of us want to create that destiny for our own communities and take the route of choice and design. And I think in Bothell that there's nothing that we have done that has been revolutionary, but what we have done is more from a comprehensive nature. I haven't found a community yet that has done so much holistically in terms of its planning process related to its economic development efforts to revitalize the downtown. And so all the tools that are available to us under the Growth Management Act, we have utilized. And it's been very effective for us in terms of really working through the recession and now generating post-recession private investment in our downtown. There's nothing preventing the community that wants to use the Growth Management Planning Act as a springboard or a framework, if you will, to create a new neighborhood plan, to create a new vision or direction for its community. And the Growth Management Act has simply provided that for us. I would say that as communities look towards reimagining their own communities as part of the Growth Management Act process, know that change is possible. That it's really the responsibility, I believe, the privilege of local government to inspire their communities, that you can create the future that your citizens want.
It's an opportunity for us to engage in a conversation of why the Growth Management Act is important. Why does it matter? And I think that is probably one of the most important parts of the comprehensive plan update, is to talk about why is this important, not just for our city, but for the region. Why does it matter that we plan for growth? And I think that it is really important now, all these many years after the Growth Management Act was passed, to remember why we do this. We want to welcome growth, not stop growth, not allow growth, not tolerate, but welcome it. We know it's coming, so how do we make the best possible town that we can?
The magnitude of growth that we will experience in Washington State is very significant. In excess of 1 million people probably in the next 20 years. The question in accommodating that is one, I suppose, not to get frightened by the numbers so much as it is to focus on what the numbers represent and how we will accommodate that growth. So if we look 20 years into the future and think about these numbers, we also need to think about what the job base might look like, how we will move people and goods within the community, how we'll provide the services we need, and to be able to have a thoughtful, honest, and rich discussion with our community about what this represents and how we will deal with that question. The reality is that these people are they're not some abstraction in terms us, they're our kids, they're families that are here because we have a viable economy. Sometimes it's important to think about the flip side. If we didn't have a viable economy and this was a ghost town, well, we wouldn't have those problems. So these are the kind of problems we want to have. The question is, what kind of community are we going to build to accommodate this growth, and what kind of job base, what kind of lifestyle do we want to have? And those are really the kind of sort of central gut questions that ought to drive our discussion and ultimately our decision.
That one was would be a kind of a good follow-up to the first thing on the agenda, this comp plan effort that's coming up and really just starting. This had a few questions, and I think we're hitting most of these fairly well. Now, this is our last plan was approved in 2005, and I believe it used to be 8 years before cities of a certain size were required to do an update. Now it's 10 years. Let's see. Was anyone here? I don't think anyone here was on this commission back in 2005. And I think it's the same with council. And of course, conditions today are worlds different from they were in 2005. But this whole update process, I think what I like about what I see is that, you know, in my experience, Monroe has been fairly passive, fairly quiet. It's hard to get people out unless it's something that directly affects them, like, you know, the neighbors with East Monroe. You know, they had a direct tie and a direct effect from that. But if you lived elsewhere in the city, maybe you weren't so concerned about it. Walmart was another one that maybe brought a lot of people out. Didn't used to be
that way, though.
Didn't used to be?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We were getting complaints because of Skyco Week. And Snowfish. And Grand Falls. This place is packed with people. That's when the Growth Management Act first started.
Okay.
And we had the Main Street,
West Main.
Plan, West Main. When we went through that, we had a get together, and I can't remember the name of it, but the meeting, the type meeting. What was that type of meeting where you get people come in and just interact and throw out ideas?
That was down to school.
Yeah, it was down to school. And that we had a good turnout. I thought it was a pretty good turnout for that West Main thing. Yeah. And there was a lot of good input. So I'm hoping that we'll see that we generate enough interest in this to get a good turnout.
Also, I came in. And the tail end of West Main, when I came in, was just in the final, I think the first trips to council for approval. So I had to learn a lot in a hurry about West Main Street mm-hmm. Corner. I know it had been through a long process. It'd take quite a bit of time to put together. But all the people working on that were gone when I got here.
Yeah.
So we. I attended all those meetings because I was affected by it there. And then they appointed me to this thing, and I couldn't say no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I hope there's been enough controversy and enough growth and enough change in the last few years that people will come out. It's a little hard to get people on something like comprehensive plans. Oh, what's that? You know, it's trying to think 20 years ahead. But I think we can do it if there are enough things going on that trigger people's interest, and we make it interesting, make it some of these fun exercises so that they might come back to the next workshop, or they might pay attention on the mind mixer site and do some interaction with that. There's a whole generation out there that is really tied to the digital world, and I'm not one of them so much, but that's the whole trend, is the way it's digital in a lot of ways is kind of displacing the traditional town hall kind of setting.
Commissioner Rotten?
Does the commission, the county council and the state get involved with our committee, our process here or not? They used to get really involved.
Indirectly, I mean, of course, at the state level, they set the basic process and basic requirements, and we get a lot of support and involvement from Snohomish County. I sit on this Snohomish County Tomorrow group, which is being represented from all the local jurisdictions.
First of all,
really?
Yeah.
Huh. There you go. Things like the 2012 Billable Lands Report that was just finished. A lot of information and support of these update processes. It really started at the county level, bringing it down to local level.
Comp plans, when they first started out, some of the smaller cities like Granite Falls and Gobar, or smaller towns, didn't have the money or the knowledge to do it, and they would send out people from the state to help.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Jensen? In kind of a response to how you're mentioning trying to get people out here, sometimes what I'm seeing of people, their attitudes seem to be that they have come out in the past, and whatever it is, their issue or their concern, and they make their case, and in the end, nothing changes. And it seems like, as a result, people stop coming out because they're like, why should they bother? Nothing's going to change. And is there some way either we can give more weight to the public's concerns rather than just, the council stated up here they want this and we just roll it forward versus... You know, and I'm hoping maybe by these things starting this next couple of weeks, if we can somehow not just listen to them, but kind of emphasize or highlight that this idea came from the public meeting, or this idea, this change, or something to kind of give them more recognition for their support, in hopes that maybe that would help convince people that, we're trying to do things differently. Please come out and participate.
I think when we had the West Main thing, when the public did come out, they did see that a lot of what they put into that meeting came to fruition, came out in the plan. So they saw it happen,
right?
Because they were part of that process.
How many years ago was that?
Not too long.
No, it was about. I was just
eight,
brand
nine.
New. I was just brand new on the planning commission.
Oh.
It was about 4 years ago.
Okay. I mean, if I were to take Walmart, for example, you probably had a good 50-50 split, but obviously the 50% that was not satisfied is going to feel like they didn't make a difference. So it's going to be hard to get that type of person back out because they're like, they didn't, Any issue that has a divide is going to have a portion that's not going to feel like
we don't have to do it all for
No, I'm not saying that we did, but just in general, sometimes there's that feeling that they come out, they make their case, and then ultimately nobody listens.
I don't know how you solve that, but we have to have public input, and the best way to do it, the way I do it, is every time I go into a business. Talk to the company or whatever. I mentioned to him here in Monroe, I said, hey, we got this conditions thing going. You might want to look into showing up. Because your business depends on what happens in this city. So it's just that I mentioned it to them and in conversation and nothing pressure, but you talk to people, you mention it, you know, say, hey, why don't you come on over and give us some input. We could definitely use more participation. I think as I consider myself a leader in the community because I'm on this commission and I get to see things that happen. So I think it's up to me and other people like us to go out there and you know, let people know.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing we can do. Whether they get what they want or not, that's not the point. The point is they are offered the opportunity to come out and be a part of it.
And give us some good ideas.
Yeah. And right. Lord knows, when we had that meeting, I wish I could remember, it was a strange name they used for that meeting. Paul, you would know it.
Oh, probably charrette.
A charrette, that's what
yes.
It was. It was a charrette, yeah. And it was just amazing that some of the great ideas that flew out of that meeting. And, yeah, I was impressed. I was really impressed. But we haven't had one since, so maybe we can do some more of this.
Like this meeting, is it next week? 23rd, or the 23rd is going to have some aspects of a charrette, some of that hands-on
yeah.
exercise, and not so much the yak. I know when I was teaching, I taught classes to upperclassmen grad students, and they were typically part lecture and part hands-on, and needless to say, they like the hands-on part a lot better.
Yeah. Commissioner
Brennan? We have a board set up for some facilitator to take ideas from the crowd right on the board and what is the most important. And then we give everybody a chance to let people look at the board and see what's going on, and then they, you know, that will bring up new ideas.
I think some of that in some way is going to happen at that workshop. And I'm not sure exactly what they have in mind or how they're going to do it,
okay.
But I'm just seeing it. You know, running things like that with sticky notes or with
yeah.
great big.
That's how they did it at the charrette.
Plaster the walls with these
yep.
huge butcher paper or so
it,
forth.
It,
and
it works.
And, give people a pen, magic marks here.
Yeah.
Show me.
Is it just open house style that people could come halfway through and still participate? Or do they have
yeah.
to be there at the start to understand what's
Well, in this one, it would be, I think, helpful to be there at the start and to, cause there's kind of a sequence to it. As opposed to just a drop in, drop out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some structure to it.
Donuts and coffee help.
The what?
Donuts and coffee.
Donuts and coffee?
It helps.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Ice cream.
Mostly coffee.
Free food.
Maybe in the summer ice.
Anybody else got any comments?
If the Seahawks are still in it, maybe you can get someone thrown out and say, hey, we're going to have a sea gal there or something.
Yeah,
have a whole community.
Maybe we get Russell Wilson to come out for a cameo.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Okay, Paul, you said you have some slides here.
Yeah, last, try to make this fairly brief. For a year. Oh, where is it? Where's the appearance? Thank you.
I just wanted to touch on some of the points from the first part of this guide in terms of decision making. And right in the one of the very first pages, I thought was a pretty succinct statement, which should scare us all away. That, I mean, sometimes the work you do, it is technical, but for the most part, it really is trying to work through priorities and work through values and work for different perspectives, and it's you're kind of working in the dark a good bit. We don't have council necessarily giving us really clear instructions, nor do we want clear instruction, you know, to a point, policy, but you don't want to be hamstrung by that. Conclude with planning is one of the extreme examples of administrative discretion to be found in American government. That's, I think, a academic way of saying controlled chaos when it comes to the work that we do here. I mean, planning is fraught,
for the most part,
fraught with danger, fraught with unpredictability and uncertainty. That's what makes it interesting. But this commission, you know, you are a public body, and your responsibilities are fairly limited. I mean, they're huge, but it's comp plan amendments and updates, and it's code amendments, zoning code primarily. Zoning, some involved with shoreline, not much, but you're not involved with subdivisions, but all aspects of the zoning code, the uses, the regulations, the sign code, down to the smallest detail. That's really, those two areas are your charge. There's lots of other committees where the commission also handles preliminary plats, subdivisions, they handle conditional use permits and so forth. But not here. That's done by our hearing examiner. If you were also doing that work, you would really be overloaded, frankly. So I found Washington is fairly process intensive. It kind of pales against California, but it is really quite a bit more involved than free spirited Arizona, kind of the Wild West there. But so you really are saddled with quite a bit of responsibility. And everything you do should be supporting the public interest. And when I was in school, I was a professor while I was also a part-time student and then working full-time, but there was always a lot of discussion about public interest and how in the world you define what that is. But somehow you have to account for the whole community, and we got different characters on the dais here, but it's all about trying to absorb what those community interests are and make some recommendations. And the book focused on what it comes down to is good judgment. It's really all about judgment on the comp plan what's that, unintended consequences might be, or what the consequences might be, and kind of coming back around to that public interest thing. I mean, I could, you know, I'm the kind of guy, you give me a rectangle and I can talk about it in 15 minutes, so we'll try and keep this moving along. In planning, these are what you need to consider, circumstance or condition, you know, what is it today, what's it like now? And then on that same token, what's it going to be like if you make this decision or this recommendation? How is that going to affect what it's like in the future? And, you know, East Monroe is probably a good example of that, where it's not clear on what those future effects might be. But then everything comes around, and if it is in the interest of the public, and that's pretty hard to define. And of course, thinking long term with this update, you know, we're trying to think ahead 20 years. And I'm thinking in my mind that you either have to be incredibly intelligent or a fool to think that you can predict 20 years into the future. But we do our best to to do just that. So there's some problems. And this is really talking about, you know, like different commissioners and how you might have trouble in reaching a decision. You don't know that much about it, and maybe staff hasn't gotten much information on it, or you're not familiar with it. The whole thing about attitudes and values, you know, it's hard to separate your personal values from your discussion and decisions. Remember, I used to lecture once in a while to graduate students on values in planning, and what I used as my opening piece was, you ever seen the poster, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten? I'd have them read that, and I'd say, there you go.
Yeah.
Lecture's over. Then I'd go on from there.
Yeah.
But being able to, account for the facts and think about what that means, and trying to avoid uncertainties. There's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of things that are just so hard to understand and really try and predict. And I guess we all do our best to try and flush out what the effects might be. And you may have trouble with the work trying to make a decision because you're concerned about whether you're out there on a limb and what the others are thinking. And in the same way, if there are resources out there that are not being utilized or that are a problem, or are you able to balance all these conflicting effects or conflicting goals or conflicting information, even, you know, what are the facts? How do you clear the cloud? I thought this book was kind of interesting. As you read through it, it talks more about some of this in detail, and it gets a little heavy, a little academic or pedantic, I guess is the word. But there's some good observations in there, I think, that help deal with this whole decision-making process. Just a few more. So, what screws it up? There are so many interests out there. You know, we talk about protecting the public interest and all aspects of the community. You know, you think about in terms of ethnics or political bent or philosophical bent or a tree hugger versus a survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
How you include all of that, and we had some discussion about property rights the last few months, personal and property rights. But then you're also held by state law and, of course, by just best practice to have due process and an open, transparent process. And East Monroe, I'd have to say, did deserve its due process, which it finally got. And not everyone here or out there in the community agrees with what the conclusion was. But I think the most important thing was that it was given its due process, and it is, you know, that's the way it came out of that process. But when you're thinking, or you know, when you're trying to make your decision, you're really trying to make good judgment in the interest of the community, not just yourself, but for the community, and somehow dealing with all these conflicting perspectives and conflicting information and the value conflict. In other words, this classic situation ethics thing, if you're like a planner and your boss tells you to, you know, rezone this property to something and you don't agree, can lead to situations where you either, or I'll say that it's in some way compromises your personal values. Maybe it's clear-cutting 50 acres to do a subdivision and you think it should be done a different way. But it's cases where it might come down to you either agree with your boss and carry on, or you quit, or you get fired. in fact, one of my sons was in a situation like that in a school. I won't tell you the whole story, but he totally disagreed with the principal about this policy of how they were using the kids for certain things, and they, you know, he flat told them. The principal said, "This is the way it is, and that's it." And so my son said, "Okay, I'm not going to renew my contract." We have the courage to say, "Walk away." But sometimes it's pretty hard to balance your values with what you're trying to decide. But you can't help but do that. So I'm digressing. So they talked about four different types of commissioners. You might recognize some of yourselves, or we're all probably some kind of a mix. But the first one is very objective, analytical. The focus is on analyzing the existing conditions, what's there now, not so much toward the future, but very precise. And this person doesn't pay much attention so much to policy or precedent, that sort of thing, or to testimony, but it's based on the logic of the analysis. And these are kind of extreme examples. This person does, when you have conflicting goals, is wants to seek some kind of a balance. There's another kind that says, this is the goal and this is the only one that we're going to work with. I'm sure each of us has some aspects of maybe some even of each of these. The other one was the utilitarian, and that person focuses not so much on the front end, on the analytical, as he or she does the consequences. What's going to come out of this? And try and, you know, do rely on trying to balance values and some recognizing some of the policy that the first one is choosing to ignore. And this person also, there was quite a bit about when people testify, some people put more faith in, quote, people of good character. Although at the same time, they dismiss some of the statements people make because you know that they're advocating for themselves and they may hedge the truth or hedge the facts in some cases. But certainly on the testimony of professionals or staff, I guess, in this case, they like consistency. The first one is not so much about consistency, but really still really going back to what's it like today, and what exactly does that mean in a very precise way? I'm thinking, you know, very logical. This one is a little less logical and more futuristic thinking. This third one, common sense. I don't think the first one uses common sense nearly as much as this one does. But this person, it might be one aspect of the proposal. It might be, I don't know, choose something, improving traffic, and or a more higher level principle of preserving neighborhoods. That becomes the driving principle behind their decisions. And those people are probably the most that are influenced by the applicants. If they think that they're good character and they think they're trusting, they tend to, I think, kind of empathize with those people. They rely on the staff and focus on one goal. Well, East Monroe had, I don't want to keep using that as an example, they had some potentially conflicting goals. So you pick the one strong goal and move with that rather than trying to seek more of a balance. And the last one is called proper conduct. This is, I guess, maybe an Englishman that pays more attention to the process and the rules and the regulations as the focus, not so much the, a little more objective, not so much the policy, but are we following the rules? Which can be a good thing in terms of the process and keeping meeting the requirements and desires for public awareness and public input. But testimony from people that is based on fact. And I think that's one thing that the book emphasized, was that if people are giving testimony and they're presenting their desires and their interests, that's fine, but then the commission needs to say, okay, give me some facts, back it up with facts. The impact fees, there's a lot of discussion. You know, this is going to hurt the school kids, this is going to hurt the developers. Well, show me. We had that from council too, is that, you know, a couple of them said, well, I haven't seen any documentation that says that reducing or increasing the school impact fee is going to really make a difference in whether builders will favor Monroe versus somewhere else. You know, don't just give me conjecture, give me facts. And this person also likes consistency. Consistency is good in the way that decisions are reached, I think, and that we don't make opposing decisions where one is arrived at in a certain way and you come to this conclusion, then on the next similar project you come with a totally different conclusion. Unless there's reason, there should be some consistency there. We have to be very careful about that in zoning interpretations, that I treat all of you neighbors or applicants the same way. If I give this break to someone, then I give it to other people too. I think this is almost the last one. Obviously, I'm taking a lot of information and condensing it in a very quick, but taking the role and making the role. This is where it gets a little scary. You have to keep some sort of balance in how you get, take, and acknowledge opinions, because there are going to be very different opinions that keep coming at you. You need to have some compassion in listening and bringing that forth in your recommendations. And try, I guess, be as neutral as possible. I think we each have different, you know, there's 6 or 7 different political and personal perspectives here, that is kept somewhat, I won't say kept down, because that needs to come out in the discussions, but that you also have to be able to be somewhat neutral so that we can carry forth with negotiation. And I know you brought up something about unanimous decisions, but you know, something that came out in this was that a unanimous decision is not a bad thing. I mean, not having any unanimous decision is not a bad thing. You wouldn't always be able to reach unanimous agreement on some issue. And we've had some where there were some dissension, minor opinion versus majority opinion, and that's okay. Fairness, this is about consistently hearing and granting decisions or recommendations, like in terms of land use or zoning code amendments, that are consistent and fair, both in terms of the hammer and the carrot, incentives and restrictions on how development happens. So it's important to try and be fair and neutral and consistent with that. The last one being rational, fair, effective, efficient, all those sorts of things. This all sounds good in theory. Of course, in practice, it's a little different. But I thought this would be a good kind of a primer on decision making. I mean, if I was in teaching a grad school class, I'd probably make weeks work out of this stuff. But over time, I want to come back and hit on some of these things, which is deep digging further into the book. Maybe next time we can talk about take a few minutes to talk about this substance. These three types of decision making that all work together when you're making a decision. If you think about it, this is really kind of a analysis of how decisions are made. They're really trying to pick it apart to find out how it truly functions. And it's that objective, analytical way of deciding how you decide versus, well, I did, seat of the pants. I put a lot of faith in my seat of the pants judgments and common sense. but the substance, the form, and the function. We'll talk more, some more about these. We'll try and make it a little more interesting, but you know, the substance is understanding and what you need to be thinking about, and really that's the meat of it. And the form is how you do it. And we have this process, and you have to go through this process of getting all the information, coming to some kind of conclusion, either individually or collectively, and then making it known. And last one is the function. That has a lot to do with due process, and partly by state law and so forth. But it's how you work through that, and these, you know, work with the regulations and work with other agencies and the resources that we do have, so that it is truly a useful decision, that it has meaning and merit and has good results, I guess. Bit of a late night primer on decision making. That's the end. I'm not mistaken. Yeah. What I want to, in the future, I'd like to do a little more training and, you know, to a little bit more of this theoretical stuff, but not much. But then really get some, maybe have the city clerk come in and talk about Robert's Rules of Order, or parliamentary procedure a little bit. But that's more about the Washington-based planning process that directly affects this group, what we're working with, some more meaningful, I guess. On track.
You know, as I was going through this last week, one of the things I was thinking of is, you know, it's almost like trying to run a business. You know, when you run a business, you have to, all same decision-making skills are required. But as a planning commissioner, you're not a full-time business person. You're here twice a month, trying to make decisions based on, you know, a number of different aspects that come at you from staff, from the public, from each other here. So to me, it's always been kind of a really tough job as a planning commissioner to have just that limited time to make these discussions. And this last part of this last year, we had meetings that went pretty late, because we had to get these things, you know, decided, and it was some pretty tough times.
Yeah.
So I have to look at it from that aspect and say, if I ran a business, you know, how would I make those decisions?
Be reasonable.
That's right. How you?
It's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. You know, when you're here twice a month, or
yeah,
sometimes once a month. Commissioners, you got any other comments?
Yes.
Commissioner Robin?
You brought up zone sign ordinance coming up again. What we spent a lot of time on last time. And I thought if we could take comments from the cities, businesses, and citizens, and staff, and rather than go through the whole thing, is take the comments and work them on rather than go through the whole process like we did last time. Because we got a pretty good process last time.
We did. Actually, that's what we have in mind. We're going to be coming back with this sooner rather than later with some tweaks to the sign code that we started last year but didn't finish. We got toward the tail end and we realized we weren't never going to get it done, the staff. So I had council extend the interim regulations for another 6 months. I really told we'd be back by the end of the year. Last year, we didn't quite make that either. But that's going to come back here fairly soon. We have a, if you recall, we have a kind of a laundry list of things that are partly based on our own, generated by staff, and partly based on comments from businesses, specific comments about things. And that's the intent, is to tackle those and not go back to the full Monty that we've been through last year. It's a pretty solid code, much improved over the previous code.
Okay.
I don't think so. Hope that helped a little bit, and we'll talk some more about some of this stuff.
I do want to say I appreciate you bringing this up, this the training. I know I've been here 4 years, but you get in a rut, I guess you would say, and then you need training every once in a while. So I think it's good for all of us, especially people who have not been through training before. So I thank you for doing that.
We have a pretty seasoned thinkers and business people here, so it'll make it easier, but it's tough. It's not an easy job. I was telling Tina asked me if I'd ever been a plank commissioner. I said, no way. But on a parks board.
Yeah.
But that's different from a plank commissioner. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah, parks board. All right, next thing then is discussion by commissioners and staff. Paul, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, it's a couple things. We talked about the meeting Thursday and the workshop following. We are bringing back signs at some point. We're also going to be bringing back marijuana. Council has a public hearing tomorrow night. Their last action after the commission recommended adopting permanent regulations actually last spring. The council didn't take it on until this past fall, and they have now voted in a moratorium on issuing business licenses to marijuana businesses and banned medical marijuana permanently. Previously it had been banned in the interim regulations, but now it's banned permanently. And adopting new interim regulations that are basically a carryover from the previous regs that you recommended approval. But we may bring it back for some tweaking while we have this moratorium underway. Monroe has been assigned one license by the state. We've had a flood of people calling about retail, about production, about processing. There's a lot of interest out there.
Wasn't there one city that said it's a federal offense and they're not going to do it?
Kent is kind of the test case city for banning, I believe it's medical. And the Attorney General is supposed to be issuing an opinion maybe within the next month about whether cities can opt out of and ban marijuana uses. There's some on council that would prefer just to ban it completely. But we have, the zoning we have is so restrictive that there really isn't very much area to sell or produce or process marijuana in, by the time you take out the areas where they're not allowed by buffer zones and so forth. So in reality, there's not much that the person could do, but it's possible.
I think to get a business license in Monroe says the business needs to comply with state and federal regulations. So,
it does.
So Monroe is in a quandary with that. So it would either need to ignore that, provide an exception, or change that part.
You can sue it if you do, and sue it if you don't.
Right. So that's currently what it says. You need to comply with both.
It's a real quandary.
Yep.
Commissioner Dursey.
Is the reason why they are banning medical marijuana is because there are no regulations for that? Is that the reason why the state is doing that? Is that correct?
Well, the city, Monroe, has in this latest go-round banned medical. In fact, it was banned in the first interim regulations also.
Can you refresh my memory why that is?
Because the city didn't want it. And we thought that we were working on the assumption, or the city was working on the assumption, that we would be able to legally ban medical marijuana. This was before the recreational marijuana came along, and I think they're going to come together eventually. I think the base of it was if medical marijuana is allowed, then that just kind of opens the door to potential problems with crime and undesirable activity and so forth, even at that level, at the medical level. But Kent is still in the process of running through the, I forget what level in the court system it is now, that about banning medical. But the city council sent a resolution to the state saying, please consider a local option where we can opt out if we so choose. The downside, if there is such a thing, if you call it that, is that if a city opts out of allowing medical or allowing marijuana businesses, then they will also not partake in any potential shared revenue from that on the state level, which may or may not happen. But I don't know what the sentiment is in terms of the total council, but if they were able to ban it permanently, there at least, well, probably at least one or two that would do so without question. Others may come to the same conclusion.
How soon is this coming back to the planning commission?
The next month or two.
Okay.
Probably the next month or so. Maybe more. We have until June, but the intent is to act on it sooner rather than later.
I guess the state of Colorado is running into all sorts of issues because there was started this January, and they're having a lot of issues. So something to keep an eye on, I guess.
That's right. Yep. And last thing is a reminder to be sure and get in that Mind Maker thing and register and spread the word.
I just did. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Filled out my survey.
Oh, good. Good. That's all I have.
Commissioner Jensen?
I was just curious. I've been hearing talk about some funding that came in for finishing Turning Place. Is there a schedule now for when that will actually start?
There is, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. But by now, I can tell you that there's a fast track on a roundabout at Kelsey and Chain Link. A roundabout at that intersection needs to be completed before Walmart will be allowed to open. So there's a big push on that right now. We'll have it done by the middle of October.
Is that when they're expected to open? Is it October?
Probably November 1st or so. Well, actually, probably before Halloween is the latest word, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, Christmas season starts in September.
Is there going to be an access off of that roundabout then into Walmart?
No.
No?
No, they would access from the west.
From Kelsey?
Yeah, from the west, from Galaxy.
Was it Galaxy? I thought there was going to be another access when we saw the Walmart charts. Sort of more almost opposite the lows.
I don't think there's any access directly to Kelsey. And there may be something to the east, but I don't remember. I don't think so. I think it's all coming from the west side.
That's what I heard.
And then the Five Guys place, you've told us about that before. Do you know where they're going to be?
They're in that building that is south of the theater.
Oh, okay.
I think it may be
an existing building.
Existing, yeah.
Oh.
I think there was a Thai restaurant in the space. It's in that building.
There's some empty spaces in there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, other news, Discount Tire is planning to build on the west side of the Lowe's driveway off of Kelsey. They're in the final stages of they've reached an agreement with the city and sold the property.
Off of Kelsey?
Right.
I'm sorry,
Tierney.
Yeah,
not
okay.
Kelsey. Tierney.
I was trying to find
in my mind. There's a couple of other possibilities circulating around in that North Kelsey area, south and east of Providence, south of Lowe's.
Any idea when that project would be
discounts, you know, could be they're going through their 60-day feasibility or wrap-up period, and they'll close soon after that. We could be seeing something of that fairly soon.
Is that something that has to go through City Council and have public testimony or anything?
No, not for the
business.
Because they did for Walmart.
Not for the use. Yeah. That was a binding site plan, which is a strange animal that...
It was mostly because of the development plan issues.
Yeah, in relation to the North Kelsey development plan guidelines and so forth. Right. That was complicated.
So I was wondering if the prior outfit would have to go through the same...
No, that'd be an administrative staff review. Building project.
One other question: does the city have any influence if the work on 522 impacts the city? Like, for example, at 6 in the morning, traffic is quite congested on West Main trying to get up that ramp, and I'm seeing indications what they were planning in December, they might now be planning this Friday, because I started seeing the signs going up about the closure, the overnight closure Friday night, which I expect is going to be they're going to move a portion of 522 to the newly paved so they can tear up the old stuff. You can see the little the center line things put on the other side from about West Main to just before the river. But when they do, my concern is that their on-ramp from West Main is now going to be sort of shorter. Right now you kind of got the on-ramp and the distance to cross the new lanes to the old highway. And when they move that over, that's going to make it shorter and push more traffic down onto West Main in the morning. Does the city have any way to ask the developer to add more extended merge lane or do something to mitigate that before they do it this Friday?
Short answer is no.
No, you just have to live with
it. DOT is pretty much in a world of their own. And they don't all necessarily, I shouldn't say this on the record, they don't always necessarily play well with others.
They don't play well.
That's true.
Okay. There you go.
So respect for that.
All right, that's all I have.
Commissioner Robin?
You were talking about turning road 1,200 feet of it. I was wondering, is the cost, are we going to spend all that money on that 1,200 feet?
I'm not sure. It's more than 1,200 feet. It'd be from Chain Lake around back to Ford Highway 2.
That's about 1,200 feet.
Is that 1,200 feet? Only a quarter mile?
That's
it's going to be expensive.
Pretty expensive.
A PUD is also throwing in like $1 million toward that road construction. They bought that property behind the fitness center.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Back by the, 10? Yeah, I forget how many acres.
I think
for a new district or regional office.
I'm just curious. It's so expensive.
It is. There's a lot of grade change there. It's going to be an expensive project.
I think they have an overpass over Woods Creek or what?
No.
I assume it'll connect with that old one.
I can't quite picture the east connection back, but it will be a direct shot from 2 up Tierney, up and across on Tierney.
All the way from 2? Or from Old Owen?
Well, from Old Owen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Commissioner Dirksen?
Nothing tonight.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Yeah, did Jeff Sachs get fired?
Well, I should have brought that up. His position has been eliminated.
I guess that's
what that means.
So basically, I guess, yeah.
He lost a very valuable resource. I think that was a really poor decision on the part of the mayor. Very myopic, very short-sighted. It was just a bad decision. And it's going to affect us. He was a good resource for a lot of things we were doing, as well as for the city. And I just don't get it. know, you talk about getting along with the administration. How do you do it when you have people like that calling the shots? Not good.
There was a discussion about that at council too. And some
there may be more
pushback.
You know, it's just very poor decision making right out of the chute. If he wants to change the position, Jeff could have accommodated it either way. But I think he changed the position to get rid of him. So basically, he's not coming back.
I think that's correct.
Okay, thanks. I'm done.
Yeah. Commissioner Stanger?
I just echo that. I think Jeff Sachs has done a great job over the last 4 years. Seen a lot of positive things that happened with us, so yeah. I would echo that. And well, that was a short sighted thing. So.
Well, personally, I'd like to say welcome to
thank you.
Planning Commission. You stick around a little bit, I'd like to chat with you just a little bit before you take off tonight. For the next meeting, Paul, I would like to add a couple things. And I spoke to you about it a little bit earlier. The officers' election thing. And also, I'd like to see if there's somebody else that would like to take my position on the Parks Board. I've been on it now for 3 years, I think it is. And I think it's a chance for somebody else to sit in on that board. It can be a lot of fun. And you're going through a lot of changes coming up. So I think it would be a good thing for somebody to sit on that board for a while. They meet once a month on a Thursday. I think it's third Thursday of the month.
I think so.
And meetings are usually fairly short, a lot shorter than planning commission meetings. But there's a lot of good people on that board, and I think it's a good opportunity for someone to take that over. So those are a couple of things I'd like to have on the agenda for the
You definitely have elections. Right. Oh, and not planning a second meeting in January, since we'll be meeting on the 23rd. And hopefully we have our first meeting in February. We'll have some feedback on the workshop. And I'm hoping that we, right in that time from there, we can maybe do a joint council meeting.
That'd be really good. If there's something you need me to do, let me know.
Okay.
Okay. As I'm still chairman, but that may not be done for who knows. So. Okay, that's all I have. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move.
Moved by Commissioner Rodland. Second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Jensen. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
It's been a long time since we had one before 9 o'clock.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's a different thing.
It has to be. No.